This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. How are you getting along with the folks these days? Is everybody still talking, sharing good times, able to lean on each other for advice and support? Well, not everyone has that. Family estrangement is more common than you might think. Adult children may not be on speaking terms with one or more of their parents. So how do we process that? Do we have regret? Do we have shame? Or do we recognize that sometimes this is the best, given the toxic nature of the relationship? So let's talk about families that have broken up. Is this you? Do you want to share your story? You can be anonymous, and I think a lot of us have a lot to learn from other people's stories in this area. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And you can tweet at us at TPRSource or email us at thesource@tpr.org. And that call-in number, 833-877-8255, you can text us at that number as well, and you can be anonymous. We're joined this hour by Carl Pillemer, PhD, professor of human development at Cornell University, author of the book Fault Lines, Fractured Families, and How to Mend Them. And Carl, welcome to The Source. And Carl, are you there?
I am, and sorry for a brief disruption. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to our conversation today.
That's awesome. So you study family estrangement at the Professor of Human Development at Cornell University. Why is this a topic to be studied?
You know, I think we live in a world today where people have gotten the idea that families no longer matter. So we hear continually in the media about friends as family and the family's over and the declining importance of the family. But in actual fact, for most people, their family relationships are extraordinarily important. They give us a sense of meaning, a sense of our location in life, and provide a dramatic amount of personal, financial, and other resources. So what I learned is that when families fracture, it's not a trivial event for most people. It really can be an extraordinary life upheaval and one that causes, we learned, what is essentially chronic stress, where people find that this kind of a rift is something that is almost impossible to get over. So I think we've learned, you know, that families matter, and we see that especially when families shatter, so to speak, through estrangement.
So if a person has a well-working family, whether if it's just the nuclear family or an extended family, that is a tremendous asset.
It's enormous. It's a form of what we social scientists call social capital. And, you know, these relationships are among the most stable you'll ever have. The poet Robert Frost very famously said his definition of a family was when you go there, they have to take you in. And that's still true for most people, that these are the most enduring relationships they have. Also, David, we're clearly bonded to our nuclear family members by biological bonds of attachment that don't just go away when family members decide to say, I'm done, I'm never going to see you again. So they're both, you know, the social norms that hold families together, but also we are attached to our close family members in ways that we can't rationally explain. I think that's why I learned that, you know, this is just not, it's not a simple thing to say goodbye to your family, even in our looser society.
So family, having a well-working family is a tremendous asset. It's worth keeping. It's worth putting effort into maintaining. It's not something to be taken lightly to walk away and say, we're breaking up. I don't want to see any of you people ever again. And how often does that happen?
So I was really surprised. It's very rare. I've been a social scientist for a long time, so it's not often I'm genuinely surprised by a research finding. But I decided to try to answer the question, okay, how many people are estranged from a close relative? Is it a media-created phenomenon? As you know, and this is not to blame the media, but we often read that X, Y, or Z is the latest epidemic. So I wanted to know, is this something we're just hearing about with, you know, the Meghan Markles and Angelina Jolies, or is this real? So I conducted the first true national random sample survey asking people a very clear question. Are you estranged from a close family member? That is, you have no contact with him or her at this time. Much to my surprise, over a quarter of Americans, 27%, said that yes. In fact, at the moment of being interviewed, they were estranged from someone. That translates to almost 70 million Americans. So often numbers, you know, don't speak for themselves. In this case, they really do. This is a problem that is really hiding in plain sight in our country and probably in other countries as well.
So how do we get from the fact that this exists to that this is a problem?
Well, so here's one of the things I did. In that survey, for example, I thought, well, maybe some people just drift apart from one another. So I also asked them, does this upset you? Is this a problem for you? And of those 27%, only a very small number, 2 or 3%, said that it didn't bother them. So that for a lot of people, it is bothersome. Also, though, I learned that estrangements have tremendous collateral damage. They ripple out across generations and down through generations. So I talked to people, for example, one wonderful woman who'd been raised next to her cousins, part of a big extended family. When the parents had a rift in the parental generation, she never saw those cousins again, basically. So that's another reason that when people make this decision to cut off a family member, it doesn't only affect them. It ripples its way through a whole host of family relationships. So for a lot of people, it's a big deal.
So we're going to be talking about that this afternoon. Our phone lines are open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We have on the line this afternoon one of the national experts on families that have been estrangement, that have been torn apart. He has a toolbox on how to mend them. But first, we got to figure out, should you do that? If you have a relationship, a family that is toxic, maybe you are better off. So when should you start thinking about, or should you be thinking about, is mending the family right for you? How do you get started? And first of all, we got to figure out, how is this impacting you? Is this a tremendous weight that you're carrying around? How would you like to offload that weight and get back together with your family? And what are the boundaries to do that? The number is 833-877-8255. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With us this afternoon, Carl Pillemer, PhD. He is the author of Fault Lines, Fractured Families, and How to Mend Them. He's also the best-selling author of 30 Lessons for Living. And we're talking about families. People are estranged. They don't talk to each other anymore. There may be some hostility, some resentment, and how this can cause actual health negative impacts for individuals. And you might feel a lot better if you figured out how to get along. And he's got a toolbox on how to approach that. If you want to call in, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can be anonymous. You can also tweet at us at TPR Source. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. So Carl, how do people first decide, okay, I want bygones to be bygones. This happened a long time ago. I don't even remember what we're fighting about. I really want to get back together with my family. Is there a process?
You know, I love it when someone asks me a question I can really answer. And fortunately, our data address exactly that question. My studies included a number of people, around a couple hundred, who were in unresolved estrangements. But I also took an additional step of interviewing over 100 people who had reconciled after years or even many decades. So I have both perspectives of people who are in estrangements and staying there, and people who managed to bridge the rift. Even if the relationship was imperfect, they somehow got back together. And one chapter in the book is called, Are You Ready to Reconcile? And that's really important for everyone to understand. You have to know individually if you're ready either to reach out to a relative or to say out or to say yes to their request. So when they reach out, obviously there are cases often when abuse has occurred or when a person is dangerous, or when the relationship is just too damaging, that many people are highly justified in not trying to reconnect. And I argue in the book, or I suggest in the book, that if someone like that, if it's a tremendously difficult relationship, reconnecting with the help of a psychotherapist or other counselor is actually very helpful and can prevent problems from occurring. That said, I talked to quite a few people who had had extraordinarily difficult relationships. And as time progressed, as people changed, as circumstances changed, they were able to come back together. But people need to take a good look at their own situation, assess their own safety, both physically and mentally, and come to a clear decision as to whether a reconciliation attempt is right for them.
If a person is estranged from their family and the family is toxic and they're doing it for their own benefit to maintain their mental and physical health, how should they reach a point where they're saying, I did this, I will own this because I know this is the right decision for me? They should offload the shame.
Excellent point. One of the main findings of the research I did, which also surprised me to some extent, is this. We live in a society now where people are open about just about anything, where we live our whole lives on social media. Being in an estrangement, especially between parents and children or siblings, is something that almost everyone found shameful. For example, in my earlier books, I've kept people anonymous, and I had many people who would like to have their real names used. There was no one in this case who wanted to be personally identified with their estrangement. Over and over, people told me they felt shame and guilt about it. Indeed, that's the reason why I wrote the book, in part, is to bring this problem out of the shadows and into the clear light of discussion. So it's absolutely true. If someone has defensively left a relationship that they simply can't tolerate, they do need to be allowed to have that experience and not feel ashamed about it. On the other hand, I will say that those individuals who weren't in such extreme situations found that the whole process of reconciliation was beneficial to them as well, that they learned a lot about themselves. So I think people have to keep these two concepts in their minds at once, that there are some people for whom reconciliation may never work, but there are a large number of people for whom it really is possible to mend the fractured family. So I tried to sort of help both groups as much as I could in the work I've been doing.
Let's go to the phones. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We have Carl Pillemer with us, PhD author of Fault Lines, Fractured Families, and How to Mend Them. And Leela has called in. Leela, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I don't know if you have me down as Leela or Liza. It doesn't matter. But I thank you for the opportunity to not only speak, but to listen to the wisdom here. My situation is one of extreme estrangement due to triangulation that occurred with a covert narcissistic partner after almost 40 years of marriage. It was my fault for not seeing, being insightful and self-aware enough to understand what was going on behind the scenes. And by the time that I did, there was so much damage done that I have three adult children who no longer communicate with each other. Although in my heart, I do believe that they will mature, that they will have other people speaking into their lives, and that there will be reconciliation. But it is life-threatening to my heart. And I know these children's hearts too, each in their individual way.
So tell me more about how you feel about this.
The shame for not understanding what was going on was huge. And the ripple effects are generational. And I can see it in family patterns from his family pattern on. And my background is psych. But, you know, you teach what you really need to know. And I just was vapidly blind to what was occurring.
What would you like to see happen?
I'd like to see the children be able to come together in their young adulthood to say, geez, I've heard both parents own X, Y, and Z. I've sensed growth. I see a universal pattern here, especially since the statistics are what they are. We are stronger together than we are apart. This is not toxicity. I understand toxicity in families. This is so menial, so menial, and yet it has become deeper because of the lack of communication. And now with cell phones, people block each other. So I write and I journal and I mail letters that will never be sent. And if nothing occurs upon death, maybe something can be gleaned from what was written in my own ownership. I am not blaming anyone, but the patterns are huge. The shame is huge. And the divisiveness that occurs behind the scenes needs to be discussed openly.
Liza, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate you and your story. Carl Pillemer, what do you think of what we just heard here?
That was a phenomenal account and so insightfully told. I hope, you know, that your listeners really, you know, were able to attend to it because it encapsulates so many of the issues. The, well, let me just quickly, you know, make a couple of points. The caller didn't specify whether her children are just estranged from one another or if they are also estranged from her. One thing we've learned is if they're in contact with you, you can serve as a conduit between them. You can keep people up to date. It very typically does not work to aggressively try to bring, say, estranged offspring or other relatives together, but you can keep it from being a lack of information, especially as people do grow and change. I'll make another point that I think is really reflected in that caller's message. Many people who were in long-term estrangements told me when I asked, what would help you now? Their answer was some version of a time machine. You know, they would like to go back and prevent the estrangement from occurring. So I do encourage people to really think, especially with their adult children, they're not necessarily in this forever. I'm in my 60s and we were raised, and people older than me, that you stuck with your family no matter what. People in the current generation love their parents, but if things aren't going well, they're willing to take a break. So you have to really look for the sources of possible rifts early and try to overcome them. And I think that's what the caller was getting at too, in describing how this developed. So really, really important points. I'm grateful to her.
Let's go to Faye on the phone. And Faye, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. My question is that my experience over the last few years is akin to nothing more than reaching back to, in terms of divisiveness in families, to the Vietnam War. That's the last time in my lifetime that I remember families actually being fractured based on political ideology, particularly, you know, in the last 5 years. And what I think is one of the differences is that now with social media and people's ability to just, you know, post free-flowing thought and constantly post their stances on things, their opinions, that's something that we didn't have when I was growing up. We might have, you know, crazy Uncle Joe who was a, you know, crazy conservative or crazy liberal. But now it's just barrage of people's thoughts constantly. And it's just stunning to me that families are so fractured that we can't even have holidays together because we're so aware of each other's deepest political thoughts. And it cuts so deeply personally.
Faye, thank you for that call. Carl, in this age of hyper web issues, wedge issues, is that tearing families apart?
Again, it's a fantastic and very insightful question. Just let me give a couple of quick thoughts. One, regarding the issue of social media, the caller is absolutely right, and it's completely a double-edged sword. There are people who've used social media to reconcile or just to stay in touch with relatives, but that's true. The fact that we are exposed through Facebook groups, through Twitter, through other media to our relatives' possibly aversive political beliefs It's much more in our face. So that is really true. I'll say one hopeful thing. As we looked at our research, these political conflicts are serious and they cause difficulties. Unlike some other sources of estrangement, I do see them more likely to heal over time. I think that we've gone through this extraordinarily difficult period with the last election and the coronavirus at the same time. And from some interviews that we're doing now, it seems like some of what seemed to be impossible political conflicts in families, people are beginning to get over it. One of the key pieces of advice I'm going to give to your listeners, and it's a piece of advice that's incredibly simple and incredibly difficult, both at the same time. The only solution we have uncovered to these family estrangements and rifts around politics is to create a demilitarized zone and agree not to discuss it anymore. I say to people over and over when I'm asked about this, if there's no possibility of changing another person's mind, if you have no influence, there's no reason to debate the last election. So for folks who want to avoid rifts or want to patch them up, almost the only possibility that we found in our work is making these kinds of discussions off limits when families are communicating. So as I say, it's a simple solution, but a difficult one in many families.
So setting these boundaries. So you may have a family member who believes in a lot of maybe Q stuff and they like to spout these things. And you say, I want to come, you know, let's get together for a thing, but can we just put a hold on those, and when they do bring it up, you just let it pass?
That is pretty much the advice I got. The one thing about our studies, by the way, was that always in these interviews, we ask people what would you advise someone else? So I want to assure your listeners, this is not just my advice. It's the advice of hundreds of people who've been through it, who we've interviewed. Yeah, it's precisely setting those kinds of boundaries, even to the point of I'll leave the holiday party if we start to talk about the election.
All right, we're taking a break. We're talking about family estrangement. We have a toolbox here about how to bring people back together, how to mend families. The expert with us is Carl Pillemer, PhD professor of human development at Cornell University. His book is Fault Lines, Fractured Families and How to Mend Them. We do want to hear from you. Tell us about your family. You can be anonymous. How did y'all break up? And do you want to get back together? Or do you just see something that's never, ever going to happen? How is that impacting you? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about family estrangement. We're joined by Carl Pillemer, PhD. He's written the book Fault Lines, Fractured Families and How to Mend Them. You want to call in, tell us about how this is happening to you, how it's impacting your lives, how it's impacting your health. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We have Kian on the phones. And Kian, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I just wanted to go ahead and ask, do you think that social media or really just the idea of having, you know, a social network has impeded or has it, you know, helped out communication with people? Because, you know, you're able to, you know, communicate with people across the world and solve, you know, help solve issues and stuff. But it seems like sometimes, you know, in most homes, you know, it's just a bunch of people living in the same room, even though they're families, they're all tied to their social medias and whatnot. Do you think it's hindered or it's increased the value of communication? What are your thoughts on that?
All right, Kian, thank you for that. So like right now, a lot of people, like you said, are sharing the same house, but they're living different lives, not really connected. Carl?
Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah. Absolutely. That is a great question. People are, of course, really studying that. And let me touch on it in terms of families. So one of the most positive effects of social media on families is simply the obvious ability to stay in touch. Even if it might be too much information, you can reach out to family members in ways that are low investment, low risk. So, for example, looking at estrangement, we've looked at people who reconnected during the pandemic. And we found that there were a remarkable number of families where an estranged family member came back and joined the family Zoom, came back onto the family email list, allowed people to friend them on Facebook. It's a low-cost way of getting back into a family. So it's got that really positive aspect. You know, you can like a picture on Instagram. And that turns out to be a very helpful, useful foot in the door for people who are having challenging family relationships. But the problem, as the previous caller noted as well, is that it's also so easy to be offensive, and it's very easy to do one thing which we strongly recommend against. It's very easy to draw a line in the sand. One of the most important rift prevention strategies, we argue, is to avoid drawing that line in the sand. Your lifestyle choice, your political belief, your whatever is something I absolutely can't tolerate, so you're out of my world. That happens more easily on social media because, again, it's harder to do it in a face-to-face interaction. So people who are trying to create the strongest intergenerational families possible, strong relationships with their siblings, need to use social media, but be extremely cautious about how we use it to push our family's buttons. And you know the old cliche, we can push our family's buttons because our family installed them. And that's very easy to do on social media. You know, what I would say is following the simple, normal guidance that we even give our students at Cornell for how to communicate on social media. Take time before you post something. Think and rethink a controversial post. Those kinds of simple rules for social media politeness can really help in families. And I think that would solve a number of these problems that families get themselves into.
Is there such a thing as a shadow estrangement where there's not a hard line like you talked about, but it's just, I just don't feel comfortable around them. I just don't want to be around them. I'd rather just not have to do that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And one of the things that we did in our studies that other people haven't, many other studies find their respondents from Facebook groups, from people who consider themselves estranged. We looked at people in general who reported they hadn't had contact with a relative for a long time. One of the things that we found is it's relatively unusual that someone just drifts away from a relative and has no contact. It's much more likely that there is a history and that there's been an event or a series of events. I call them in the book volcanic events, that everybody remembers where the estrangement occurred. Now, it's true. We have siblings, say, who we're less close to, who we might not see that often. But when someone's made a deliberate decision to pull away, it usually has a different quality. It's different from family conflict. It's different from lack of closeness. It involves a level of anxiety about the relationship and almost a drive to end it. That's a little different. So yes, I would say there is that kind of shadow estrangement. But when people have really cut off contact, it usually is indicative that something else and something deeper and something more potentially painful is going on. That's a great question.
Let's go to Sean on the phone. And Sean, thank you so much for calling in. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. My name is Sean, and I am a young mother. And my husband and I have been together for a while. We actually are having a bit of a rift in our own in-law / his family side of things, and we were wondering how to navigate avoiding those hard questions to ask family members if walking away is not just enough, because we do have a child and we want her to experience her other family members, because we've also been taken away and having that opportunity to grow. Like, how do you avoid that generational experience of whether or not we can have her around that same toxicity, or are we taking that away from her? Are we taking that away from us if we give in?
Sure. Tell me more about the conflict.
Well, other than the etiquette of posting about Facebook, I'm an African-American woman, and my husband is, he passes as white. So we are an interracial couple, and we have in-laws that believe Black Lives Matter are terrorists. We also have family members that do not agree with some of the things that I personally put that are personal experiences as a Black woman in Texas. And I think we got off on the etiquette of what I would like to post on my own personal page as opposed to what they felt. And there was a huge divide. And that is where it's gone from, where I haven't spoken to anyone. And it hurts because they're kind. And we are also kind people. And we want our daughter to be kind. And we don't want to take away her early years.
Yeah.
You know, experiencing other family members, because we went through that as well, and we don't want to repeat of that. So how do we navigate that from, oh, we're just going to drop them off and come back,
or okay,
we're just going to avoid all holidays, all Christmases, all birthdays kind of thing.
Got it. All right, so Carl Pillemer, thoughts?
You know, I wish I had an easy answer for that extremely good question. I think that the family has to make its own decision. So one question is, especially when a child is involved, how damaging is this? And are the relatives able to control their behavior around the child? So for example, if they are insistent on putting forth what a lot of people would consider to be damaging beliefs, which really can be interpreted on the personal level, that's something that at a minimum, a child would have to be protected from and prepared for. So one question I have is, to what extent is there enough goodwill in that family that people can agree, as I said, not to expose a child to it? So I think that's one key thing. When you bring a kid into a family situation like this, where there might be long-term consequences, that's something that the family has to decide. A second point is this: if the other relatives are motivated also to stay in the relationship, so if it's reciprocal, that we disagree on issues, say, like Black Lives Matter, but we still want to have contact, will they agree to a set of boundaries? Can one offer those family members a choice? I'm able to come see you. I'd like to have my child know you, but here are the things that are off limits. I found that a number of estrangements in our studies were overcome by people attempting to set boundaries and sticking to them. So they would open up the possibility of a relationship, but on very clear terms. Third, and this might not work in this family, but if people are motivated, this could be a situation where a third party could be brought in. So if it is between the caller and her parents-in-law, for example, who are clearly going to be highly motivated to stay in contact with the grandchild, could a trusted other, it could be a clergy person, it could be a family counselor, bring the family together to talk about it? I had many people in estrangements who told me that they wished they'd brought in an objective third party to help them through this kind of a difficult situation. I'm not sure if that would work for this caller, but it's certainly worth a try if some of the other relatives are willing to bring in a third party who can help them to set the kind of boundaries I'm talking about. I wouldn't say it's hopeless, but I will admit that when you have, you know, really problematic beliefs like that that expose a child or also the caller to, you know, identity threats almost, it's a tough one, and there might need to be some outside help and advice.
Okay, we're going to break right now. We'll come back. We'll discuss further family estrangement. At least 27% of Americans are estranged from a member of their own family. Research suggests that 40% of Americans have experienced estrangement at some point. The most common form of estrangement is between adult children and one or more of their parents. We want to call in and hear from you. The number is 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Source on Texas Public Radio, Fault Lines, Fractured Families, and How to Mend Them is a book about, it has a toolbox in here, a step-by-step approach that you might want to consider to fix a family. You know, you're estranged, you haven't talked, there's resentment, there's anger. Maybe that could be put aside, or maybe you can just come to a better alignment with the way things have developed in your life. We're joined by the author, Carl Pillemer, PhD professor of human development at Cornell University. And we've got some callers on the board. Shahzad, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. Dr. Pillemer, I'm local pediatrician in this community here in San Antonio. And I was just wondering what you think about my approach. I, you know, advise my patients, young adults or teenagers, that just, you know, the key to successful relationships between the family members or friends or for anybody for that matter, if you keep the expectations really low, then the problems would not occur. In fact, when I got married, I gave this advice to my wife as well, that please let's keep our expectations from each other to the minimum and we won't get hurt. So I was just wondering what you think about that.
All right, Shahzad, thank you for the call. And Carl?
Well, doctor, let me say you have hit the nail right on the head. Indeed, a whole chapter in the book is about revising and lowering expectations as part of reconciliation. So thank you for that. I could not agree more. There's a meme that travels around the internet that is expectations or disappointments waiting to happen. And there's almost nowhere, probably there is nowhere, where we have higher expectations than for our family members. And these are bound up in phrases we use, like blood is thicker than water, your sibling should have your back, parents should always respect their, children should always respect their parents. These kinds of expectations are so easily violated, and they are indeed at the source of a lot of family estrangements. I'll give one quick example. There were quite a few estrangements we uncovered around caregiving for an older parent. You know, there was one person doing most of the care and felt that his or her siblings, usually her siblings, didn't step up. When the person dropped some of the expectations and accepted the siblings for what they were and what they were capable of doing, other relationships improved. And people told me again and again in that situation and others that you can't expect your adult family members to change the kind of person they are. You really have to adjust your expectations for who they are. So I think the caller's absolutely right. Clearly, we have some strong expectations, but very often expectations are violated. I'll say one last thing, too, that my interviewees told me again and again who had reconciled. You have to accept the fact no one is a mind reader. Unless you express your expectations and ask your siblings or your parents about theirs, you can't assume they'll understand even what you're expecting. So communication in family stress, family crises, around what everyone expects and what they're hoping others will do is a key to preventing rifts and a key to resolving them when they occur.
All right, so I want to take it just one little step further and just add this one word, betrayal. It's a betrayal. You betrayed me. We're family, and that's not how families treat each other.
That often comes up in these situations. You're right. And that's a situation that is hard to resolve. You know what it often occurs around, interestingly, David, is it occurs around money and inheritance is one place where we saw this notion of betrayal, where a business deal gone bad, a loan not repaid, a will that's inequitably distributed. Often people feel that a sense of betrayal because money and physical possessions are associated with love and caring. And those kind of situations are challenging to overcome, especially when it's a really serious and major betrayal. Those are situations often let me interrupt myself and say, I always recommend, and my hundreds of interviewees recommended, getting help from a counselor as you work through something like that, because often betrayal cuts to the core of our identity, who we are as people. It makes us feel weak and ashamed. So often a therapist can help people work through that relationship with a family member. It's not something you and I can resolve in a few minutes, but there is that sense in some estrangements of, I've been betrayed and I can't overcome my feelings about that, even 20 or 30 years later. And that's sometimes where therapy can help.
Let's go to John on the phones. And John, you're on the air.
Yes, my question is regarding parental alienation, particularly during a divorce. How does a parent that was alienated from their children rebuild a relationship with them as they become adults when the other parent who continues to be abusive and manipulative has such control?
John, thank you for the call. And Carl Pillemer.
If there were a Nobel Prize for social scientists, the person who could answer that caller's incredibly important question would win it. And I don't like to admit that I don't have easy answers, but this is one case where I will go ahead and do so. We learned in our studies that a very prominent cause of estrangements is divorce in childhood. Children are much more likely to become estranged from a father than they are from a custodial mother or in general to the non-custodial parent. And there is no question that sometimes parents take out their anger towards their partner on children. One thing very early in the process that can work is obviously family counseling, family therapy, and help through it. It certainly requires two people having the goodwill not to exclude the other parent. Here's what I learned from parents in this situation, and probably the caller is trying this and may not find this that satisfying. They argue keeping the door open. As your children become adults, they will have more autonomy in reaching out to you. They also argued don't do, if those outreach attempts occur, what your spouse did. Don't try to poison the child against the other spouse. Start things over. In general, they argue that when the kids become adults and they're able to contact you themselves, engage to the greatest degree possible in a rebooting of the relationship, where you establish an independent relationship based on who you are now. Let the past go and build a future together and try to encourage that with the child. Honestly, though, love and goodwill towards the child and continually demonstrating your openness to a relationship is pretty much the best advice that people had. And my heart goes out to this caller and others in the same situation because it's a terribly challenging situation.
So for the folks who have that resentment, they can't let go and it's there, they feel it every day, does that have an impact on their physical health?
Yeah, we found throughout the estrangement process that people certainly suffer mental and physical problems or stress as a result. One of the findings in the studies, as I briefly mentioned earlier, is that these kinds of estrangements form a source of chronic stress. So we all know the acute kind of stress we have, like if we start to cross the street and a car's headed towards us and we step back on the sidewalk and everything becomes normal again. Estrangement is more of a form of chronic stress where people worry about it all the time. It's also a very strange situation where the person's psychologically present to us, but often physically absent. The person's there. A relationship could happen, but it's not. So I think one point I'd make to people, if you feel upset by something like that caller just described, you're not weird, you're not strange. There are millions of people experiencing the same kind of thing. It's a normal process. And to the extent that you can find help and make attempts to bridge the rift, people in general found that their psychological well-being improved.
Regret. We're coming towards the end of the program, but I want to make sure we talk about this. Regret, especially when people are at the end of life. Can you have, can you resolve things, the deathbed resolutions?
There are some deathbed resolutions, and in some work that we've been doing now, as I briefly mentioned earlier, the pandemic encouraged some people to reach out. Here's what I suggest to people, and it's one perhaps a piece of advice I would leave them with. If you're in an estrangement, and let's say it's towards the end of life, but it applies anywhere, and it's an estrangement you have brought about, and you had very good reasons, and your relative is trying to get back in, is asking for one more connection. One of the things I argue in the book is after many years, you have very little to lose by offering one last chance. You set very clear terms. Here's what you're willing to put up with and what you aren't. And you'll offer the person one more chance to reconcile. In a number of cases, people felt protected by that. It worked and they didn't have those regrets. So over and over they said, I'm so glad I offered that one last chance, because if he or she had died, I might have felt unresolved. And there's a lot of information in the book about how people can structure that last chance. So I think that is a good way to prevent regrets. At least you then don't feel guilty that you never tried.
But I have about a minute, so why not now? Why not do it right now? Remove those blocks on your phone. At least keep the door open.
I think it's worth a try. And, you know, go through the preparation and think it out, and you could wind up with a very good result.
And what do you got to lose, right?
Exactly.
Carl Pillemer, PhD, Professor of Human Development at Cornell University, author of Fault Lines, Fractured Families, and How to Mend Them. Thank you so much, Carl. It was great talking to you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chen. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.